Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amaduri, and I'm joined today with Harry Dent. He joined us last July for an update in 2020, really, I guess, close to the heart of the COVID-19 crash, what was going on with the economy. But it's been some time. We've seen a tremendous amount. I can't even believe, you know, all that's happened in the last year, you know, with the pandemic, with all of the events that's taken place, the election. I was here in Texas with the whole freeze. That seemed like its own pandemic in and of itself. And here we are, you know, stocks seemingly going to heaven, gold languishing, if you will, and real estate continuing to go up. Meanwhile, people aren't making their rent payments. They're not paying their mortgage. You know, and I mean, in here in Texas, it's just insane. You look around, people are leaving California, leaving New York by the droves. You know, people are putting homes on the market on Friday, showing it 40, 50 times over the weekend and having 30 offers on Monday. And that's not an exaggeration. Sometimes it's even more. And I'm just curious where we are right now through the eyes of Harry Dent. He's always very welcomed here at Crush the Street. Harry, thanks for coming on the show with me today.
Sure, Kenneth. You know, first of all, we're at a really pivotal point in history. I'm a cycle guy, and there's no more obvious long-term cycle for tops in the stock market than the 90-year, what I call super bubble cycle. Late 1830s, late 1920s, 29 famous top, and then crash and Great Depression. And now, and this really would have been due around late 2019, early 2020. But when COVID hit, my God, people aren't throwing out these numbers. Here's the actual numbers, what happened since COVID. $3.6 trillion in monetary stimulus on top of the already, they printed as much in 8 months as they did in 80 months in the whole first major QE program over many years. And on top of that, for the first time, fiscal stimulus, adding this 1.9 that's just getting past now trillion, 5.4 trillion. So you're talking $9 trillion. That's 42% of GDP just in the last year, stimulus to keep a $20 trillion GDP growing at 1.5 to 2%, which has been now. And this is the real paradox. You said it perfectly. Stocks are going to heaven. There's never been a stronger stock rally than this, never been a better market than this for this long. This is the longest stock bubble, 2009, even if I measure it conservatively after the first correction, just a rebound from late 2011. We're talking 8, 9, 10, 11 years bubble when most bubbles in history never lasted past 5 to 6 years in stock. So this is the greatest bubble in history. Then you look at the economy, average growth, 1.65% a year in GDP since the 2009 bottom. The worst recovery in all of history. And you look at the stock market and think we're growing at 6% with 1% inflation and we're in heaven. Okay, so that is for a simple reason. They keep printing money. This money until recently, until this fiscal stimulus, only since COVID and major now, and that's why we're getting some inflation. This money did not go into the economy, did not go to consumers or businesses like the fiscal. They just buy financial assets. They start with treasury bonds and agency bonds, but then that's more money coming into the financial asset system, chasing the same assets, and it trickles down to real estate and stocks and junk bonds and everything else. And it always ends up the most. Always, always, always. The stock market is always the biggest beneficiary, along with all financial assets. So stocks are doing the best. So that's what's happening. This is a totally artificial economy. I would say number one, people say, well, the price to earnings ratios on stocks, not quite as high as it was in 2000 in the tech bubble. Yeah, but we were growing 4.1% a year average, rolling average then versus 1.65 now. A huge difference. You couldn't expect it to be anywhere close. Every other, I just in my newsletter had 8 valuation metrics, all higher than 2000 and higher than ever by a long shot. This is the most overvalued market ever. Again, We're just pouring money into financial assets, and it just forces everything up, and stocks always get the biggest kick, you know, and then real estate, and then bonds, and da-da-da-da-da-da. So everything's overvalued. Bonds are overvalued. Real estate's overvalued. Stocks the most, then real estate. Now, so but this is playing into that 90-year, again, if you go back, I've always had, I couldn't explain it for a long time. I've always had this stock chart from Robert Prechter. He didn't create it, but he's the first one to publish it in his book, all the way back to show stocks since the late 1700s, when stock exchange actually goes back to the 1720 bubble in just a few stocks, but whatever. And it shows this incredible boom in stocks for 230 years. And if you look at that chart, it's the 90-year cycle. It's the only thing that stands out of sore thumb. Now, there's another important cycle, which I came up with in the 80s. And that is, generational spending cycles. Hey, there's always been generations. A whole book written about it by Strauss and Howe. About every 40 years, you get new generations. They've quoted in biblical times, 40-year generation cycle. But generations became much more important when the assembly line and mass manufacturing techniques made everyday workers middle class. We haven't always had a middle class, Kenneth. People don't get that. Oh, yeah, middle class. Yeah. No, we didn't have a damn middle class. Before the first middle class generation to enter the workforce fully was the Bob Hope generation right after World War II. That's when demographics became so important, because now that everyday person earning and spending money is 2 to 3 times more important than they used to be. And there's more than them ever with the giant baby boom, which was So the baby boom and the mass manufacturing assembly line revolution exalted the demographic cycle that's always been there 40 years, generations, and made it, a big deal. That cycle is the second clearest thing in the stock market back to its history. Every 40 years, like 1942, late 1982, and I've been projecting since the 80s that the low of our lifetimes for stocks would be around late 2022, just like a little less than 2 years from now. And since this bubble's been pushed out a little longer with all the stimulus, it might bottom a little later. But again, those are two things. We got this 90-year super bubble cycle and this 40-year bottom cycle coming close together. And that makes for the most dynamic potential stock market in history. Greatest bubble ever, greatest crash, or at least a crash more on the par of 29 to 32 instead of 80 to 82 or 73 to 74. Other stock crashes we've seen in our lifetime, this would be, and I've always said, this would be more like 29 to 32. Now, nobody expects that. Everybody says, the Fed won't allow it. Oh, blah, 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 blah. I'm like baloney. When people tell me that, I am more convinced. I was in Dubai with one of my most memorable moments in late 2007, giving a speech to this whole giant audience of headdresses and stuff, you know? And I'm saying Dubai is the biggest real estate in the bubble in the world right now. And it's overvalued and it's going to burst. And the people in the audience, one after another, said, Harry, you don't understand Dubai. The government is supporting the markets, real estate markets, and they'll buy if people don't. They will not let it fail. Guess what happened to real estate the next year in 2008? 50% drop in 1 year, one of the biggest real estate drops we've seen ever. And everybody in that audience says it can't happen because the government won't let it. The fact that governments are pumping something up is only creating a bigger bubble that they're going to lose control of. Now, I'll tell you the most important statistic I have, and then we can get more back and forth, that I stress today. It used to be, the record debt, and you know, at 350% of GDP in the U.S. and a lot in developed countries and stuff, and now it's $281 trillion, 3 times GDP globally. No, that's not the big number anymore. To prevent the debt bubble from collapsing in 2008-09, they printed all this money and created a monster financial asset bubble. Now, if I take, and I finally got good numbers on this, it was not easy. Real estate was the hardest to find, bonds and stocks, about $525 trillion, 6.5 times GDP financial assets in the world, okay? Normally that number would be 3 times, okay? So this is a bigger bubble. And what central banks don't understand, because they're a bunch of academics and never run a business, never had sex, okay? They don't understand that by preventing this recession, what's so bad about recessions? They clean out the economy, make us more efficient. They've done that for all of history, but they're so scared of recessions and they have to prevent it. They don't realize they're creating a monster. They cannot control $525 trillion. You know, take another stock crash like we had last year, just, you know, 40% in a matter of weeks or months. And we had another one of these after this 42% of GDP stimulus, people finally say, wait a minute, this isn't working. So I think we're at that moment where the central banks keep upping the game, because that's what you have to do. Like any addiction, this is a financial drug we're on. This is not real people spending. This is not real productivity. All the things that in generational and technology cycles that I monitor in history, I can tell you when these cycles are going to be good or bad. Oh, for your grandchildren. That's how far I can go out with this stuff. No, it's not this. It's all this money pumping, all this artificial. We've got artificial GDP growth, even at 1.65%, because it would have been zero or less without it. We got artificial earnings on that artificial growth and with lower interest rates than business would pay, which is a big percentage of profits, even though it's not a big percentage of sales. And we got high, unbelievable high valuations in stocks and real estate and everything else. So this, they've created a monster here, and all it's going to take is that, you know, that last pin to drop, that feather, that thing that triggers the avalanche. What I'm saying, the next time we have a stock crash, I think it'll be so severe that they will not be able to turn it around fast enough, and this thing will fall apart, because that's what happens at some point. The snow builds up, and there's just one snowflake that triggers that avalanche, and then try to stop an avalanche. You can't stop it. So that's my view of where we're at here. And I think we're close, because the technical indicators in the short term of stock overvaluation have really gotten extreme since COVID. Because they realized this was going to be a 20% drop in GDP. So what did they do? They printed enough money to replace a depression. You can't do that. A business can't invest, you know, half of their sales just to keep growing at 2%. They'd lose money on that. They'd go bankrupt. Well, that's what we just did. 42% of GDP we just invested to just keep crawling along. And we're still crawling along, by the way, overall, when you average it out. It won 2%. This is insanity, Kenneth. I'm telling you, 10 years from now, mark my words on this, and if not, you won't hear from me, because I will abandon my profession if this doesn't happen. People are going to look back and say, what were they smoking? You mean you just print money out of thin air and expect recessions to go away and never have to deleverage the excessive debt, never let to have zombie? Can you know how many companies are zombie companies today? These are public companies, large companies, 20% can't pay their debt and debt service. That's never happened before. Imagine how many small businesses are struggling, higher percentage than that in this COVID economy with some industries. Absolutely. Right. So this is crazy. Everybody thinks it's okay because it's been going on so long. We're just like, well, we haven't had a big downturn yet. We haven't had a deep recession yet. And when we did, they pumped us out of it. Well, they just blew it here, Kenneth, from my view. They pumped so much in. What are they going to do to play an encore to 42% of GDP? Are they going to print 100% of GDP to keep growing at 2%? When does this Ferrari just go off the road and crash? And that's what's going to happen. There is no other way this can end. It's just a question of when. I'm saying the odds are we're peaking somewhere between here and early May. And by the way, Jeremy Grantham, he does not come. He's one of these wise old, you know, macro guys. And he doesn't come out very often. He came out in January and said, this euphoria is the most he's ever seen. He says, with this level of euphoria, you are no longer a year or two away from a top. You are months. He says the market's going to be crashing by early May. And believe me, this guy, I make bold forecasts all the time. This guy just comes out once every couple of decades and says, watch out. And so if you don't listen to me, at least listen to him.
My goodness, y'all, I kind of wish it was a Ferrari going 200 miles an hour down the road. I kind of feel like it's more of a bus going 200 miles an hour down the road, and we're trying to contain
that. Barrels and chickens on top of it. Exactly. Like it's not America, yeah.
My goodness, what a powerful you know, introduction to our conversation there. I'm going to have to listen to that over a couple times. It was so compelling. And I'd love to see a chart of, you know, what it's taken over the years for, you know, that 42% of GDP, but what we've done in the past to see the growth and just how that's continuing to snowball. And it's interesting what you pointed out about having the middle class being so much part of our GDP. And, you know, we've obviously seen the stock market become a larger and larger percentage, you know, much more than GDP, whereas it used to be a much smaller percentage of GDP.
Well, yeah, and by the way, that's one of the big indicators that's more overvalued than ever. Right?
Absolutely.
That's called the Buffett indicator. And that one is higher, more overvalued than it was in 2000, and more overvalued than, and it's gone up extremely in the last couple of years. So, I mean, I'm telling you, anybody, I know people, the biggest backlash to me, Kenneth, is simple. Well, Harry, why can't they just keep printing more and more money? They already have, and they're going exponential. You can't go exponential much longer without, again, 42% of GDP. What's the next step? 100%? They're going to print 20 trillion in less than a year next time. And then what after that? 40 trillion? Come on.
Maybe it happens though until it doesn't. I mean, we know it can't go on forever, but maybe they do print 100%.
But every bubble blows. That's the point. You can only blow up a balloon so far before it pops.
Right.
There is a limit to this. You can't do this forever. And if you can, I will quit my profession and apologize to everybody personally and kiss them on the ass in public, okay? Because that would mean that you really can get something for nothing. And we've been fools for working and innovating for centuries and centuries. We should have just printed money and then sat at home and eaten hamburgers all day.
So true. And so I you brought up something in that intro there, talking about the middle class, how we had a middle class after World War II. You know, and if you could articulate maybe what the middle class or the non-existent middle class looked like and how that impacted the economy, stocks, prior to World War II. And then I really feel like we're losing our middle class now. You know, we had a middle class and we continue to lose it, right? With the money going to the top 1% and everyone else getting squeezed and happy with $600 checks, $1,000 checks, getting patted on the back, being able to go out and buy sneakers while you know, the assets of the biggest money in the world continue to go up exponentially, making them very, very wealthy. So maybe, you know, talk about it, what the middle class and the world looked like prior to World War II, and then kind of where we are now and where that's going.
Well, you know, I mean, you see it in all the old movies. When you watch old movies, they're usually set in Europe. And what are you watching? You're watching rich people party in castles and stuff, because peasants had no life. They just barely had subsistence living. It was called the Malthusian trap for thousands of years, that if you had a demographic uptick, that put more pressure on limited land, because all the people doing digging potatoes out of the earth, and actually people started starving, and it went, demographics could work against you eventually. So it was a different world. And I'll tell you, it was the breakthrough in technologies, first the Industrial Revolution, but then most important, again, the assembly line and mass manufacturing. That's what made products radically cheaper, which drove wages up. Henry Ford was the first guy to mass produce cars on the assembly line, the Model T, and to raise the wages of his workers from something like $1 to $5. He did that on purpose because he wanted to set an example for the world of why all businesses should raise it so consumers could afford his damn Model T. That was his selfish motive. Henry Ford was one of the most influential people of that time, but there's another thing going on here, is these new technologies, but also urbanization. Most people lived in rural areas, even in the US, 80% back in the 1800s, and still 60% in as of 1920, before the Great Roaring Twenties bubble. So since 1920, urbanization in the world has gone straight up on kind of an S curve explosion. It started a little earlier in the US and stuff, but that people just living in cities gives access to much more specialized and better paying jobs. You know, you're closer to everything, more networking. Urbanization is the big trick, and the world is only 51% urban now. Most of the developed countries are already urban, and that's why I apply demographics to them. But in the emerging world, demographics is my number two indicator. How much their GDP per capita is growing with increasing urbanization is the most powerful driver. So urbanization, mass manufacturing technologies created the first mass middle-class society in history. It did not exist. It was the Bridgertons, okay? It's the queens and kings and jacks and knights and all this stuff partying, you know, some 5%, another 10% living around the castle, serving them, and then a bunch of poor people barely making it, and one little famine and half of them die. That was life before the 1900 was a big turning point in century on cycle. So this is, and that, by the way, the 500-year, the most powerful long-term cycle, basically kicked in 1900, and that's what really gave a kick to the Industrial Revolution. That's what brought the mass manufacturing and the urbanization. So rising urbanization and these demographic cycles of middle-class people who now make $60,000 a year instead of $10,000 adjusted for inflation maybe in the past, okay? Far richer. Those are the two big things driving our economy. And I can measure those cycles. I can project, particularly the demographic ones. I told people this boom was going to slow down after 2007 back in the 80s, way before it happened. And it happened. The only reason we have all this money printing is to offset the predictable decline in the largest generations in history spending cycle, and the millennials, which will never be as big a force as the baby boomers, even though there's more of them, it's not as big a wave or a growth surge. The millennials don't really kick in until 2023, 24. I said that all the way back in the 80s. So we need to clean up this debt and financial asset bubble mess. Instead of perpetuating it and printing more money and keeping it going, we need to clean this thing out so the millennial generation can do their thing and stop, and they can invest for the future. They can buy houses at affordable prices again, which you can't now. We need to clear the deck so we can have this next boom. And although all the developed countries have slower demographics ahead, the US is one of the better ones. We have a stronger millennial generation than most of Europe, Japan, and East Asia, and even China. No millennial generation, zippo. The next growth in Asia is Southeast Asia and India, and that's going to be the biggest force in the next boom. But the U.S. is one of the best set in the developed world if we just get rid of this debt bubble instead of preserving it. We don't want anybody to fail. 20% public companies, zombie companies, cannot pay their debt, need to restructure, cancel that debt. Exactly. This is exactly what Puerto Rico, where I'm living, is doing right now. They're cutting their debt from $35 billion or something down to $8 billion. That's what you do to get healthy again when you overborrow, okay? We're not doing that. We're getting more unhealthy. Everything's more stretched. And I think what's going to happen is this bubble's just going to blow. The central bank's going to lose control. I'm already projecting, and have been projecting for many months, the next crash is going to be 47%, give or take, in 2 months, 3 months max, maybe as little as 6 weeks. And that's where the central banks lose control. People will say, okay, yeah, this last time you really stepped up, 42% of GDP. People don't know that. That's why I have to remind them. And we still ended up with stocks going to new lows and still ended up in a recession. Oh, this economy really is dead. If it's dead, we need to bury it and make way for a new economy. We got to bury this old economy.
Harry, so you brought up something there. You know, there's the reason why we're going to see assets fall is because an evaporation of money. And I think it's hard for people to understand how that even happens.
Most of the money is not in bank accounts. It's in these financial assets, real estate, stocks, and bonds.
Absolutely. But this deleveraging of money, this evaporation of money, because when you see the M2 money supply going up and, you know, talking about printing 42% of GDP, we're talking about this inflation of dollars in the system. But so it's hard to wrap your mind around the idea of a potential crash if you're thinking that this money needs to go somewhere, it needs a home, literally, like it needs to go into real estate, it needs to go into stocks. But articulate how that crash happens, where you deleverage and then there's a wiping away of capital. Really,
so here's the paradox here. M2 is not following this massive stimulus. You would think M2 would be off the chart. It's just do-de-do-de-do, going along like normal, because the money's not going into the economy, investing in the economy, generating profits, reinvesting. That's when you have rising money velocity. We've had money velocity falling for the last 23 years because we're not investing money productively. It's going into speculation. It's going into blowing up financial assets, not blowing up the economy. That's why we're not getting inflation with all this money printing. That's why M2 is not accelerating. What's accelerating is the financial asset bubble, like an atom bomb. That's what's going to deflate. And when that deflates, remember the number, and this is a solid number, give or take a few percent or so. When $525 trillion deleverages and just comes back down to fair value, nevertheless below that for a while, $2 to $250 trillion, three times global GDP at 80, let's say three times global GDP in money, real money in brokerage accounts and real estate, not in bank accounts, M2, will disappear. So M2 is not the thing. M2 is fine. It's just doing normal. It's the financial assets that have bubbled. That's where this money's going. And that's what makes it so dangerous. And that's why the central banks will lose control, because they've created a Frankenstein beyond anything imaginable in history. Just to give an example, in the only time we had money printing, not fiscal stimulus, not deficits like we had in the 70s or other times, was right after the worst of the Great Depression in late 32, they did start printing money for the first time to offset the downturn. They only got up to 16% of GDP in cumulative money printing before we had the 37 to 38 crash and took that out. That was the only time they did it. And that's all they got up to, was 16% before the bubble blew. This time we're up at, like I just said, 42% of GDP. This is gonna blow. There's nothing else it can do. It's just a matter of when. And who's the guy, Rothschild or whatever, you want the richest man in the world. They said, what's the secret to your wealth? This is in the 1890s. He says, I always got out a little bit early. Because when bubbles blow, they blow fast. Again, I'm also predicting 47, next crash is something like 47%. In less than 3 months, probably more like 1 to 2 months. That's gonna be the shocker. That's when people wake up and say, wait a minute, the government's already stepped up more than anybody would have thought. And despite this massive, but despite they created more stimulus in 1 year than they did in the entire 12-year QE cycle, okay? Counting the new fiscal stimulus. And we still have a crash in stocks and we still go into a recession. That's when people, if you don't get it then I'm sorry, I'm just going to stay in Puerto Rico and declare the United States a retarded nation. If you don't get it then I don't know how you're going to get it. I think the market, the smart money is going to get it by then. And they're going to, and then when they leave the markets, it's over.
Yeah, it's hard to get out of this without casualties. I mean,
there's no way to get out of it.
Yeah, and one way or another, it's either on the upside, you're out of it, or on the downside, you're just dealing with it. I mean, there's no way to really perfectly play this. We're living in a world of extreme speculation. And again, it's that middle class that's being hurt. And I think it's I don't even know what to think about it. You know, I guess my last question to you, Harry, is what's the average person to do to be resilient through this? You know, if you were to give someone some advice, maybe a 30-year-old with a family or, someone that's got a lot of savings. I mean, some general advice for people.
Well, you know, it's actually very simple. And this is a once in a lifetime event. That's why you can't listen to anybody. Joseph Kennedy did the right thing. He sold all his stocks and financial assets and rebought 3 years later after the Great Reset, 89% down in stocks in that case. General Motors in business, they hunkered down. Ford didn't. General Motors passed them in that downturn and became number one, and Ford never caught them ever again, even today, 80 years later or something. You keep your job, keep your income, you hunker down your business. I don't care how bad it gets. Businesses are going to survive in every industry and every sector. You want to be one of the three out of five or eight that survive, okay? If you survive, you're gonna walk out of this with more market share and growth than you can handle. If you just get out of these financial assets when they're so bubbly up, even if you get out 5 or 10% early and we have a crash, anything I'm talking about, you're gonna be able to rebuy all those businesses and stocks and real estate, the greatest stuff in the world, at the best discount, the lowest point. Imagine if you had bought anything in early 82, stocks, real estate, or anything, you'd have bought anything in late 32, early 33 after that great crash. That was the best thing. You would have made money hand over foot. You could have bought anything that was still alive. You know, that's the secret. Get out of the way. You're not going to stop the bubble. Nobody's going to talk the government out of doubling down. They're going to do what they do. They have to keep the music going because as soon as it stops, I'll tell you the proof of it, as soon as they just tapered a little bit, repo crisis. They had to put $700 billion in just to keep the banks from going under when they just pulled out, of just tapered a little bit the stimulus. They didn't stop it, they just tapered. So this is like a drug habit. It keeps going, takes more and more. You get more and more toxic until you fall and hit the pavement and die or go into rehab. So I'm hoping we go into rehab and not die. Okay, Japan's actually dying slowly because they're doing their example of what not to do, never deleverage the debt. Well, we're pumping up the bubble more. That's even worse. But in the end, all you can do as a business or an investor, get out of the way. Hey, I've got the best view in all of Puerto Rico. I'm selling it because I don't think it'll go down as much as other places. But hey, I'm getting older. And I don't want to sit through a long crash and wait for that to come back. You know, I don't know how bad it's going to get hit. I think it'll hold up better than most places. I think a lot of people are going to flee to the Caribbean, but still it's an uncertainty. I don't use it that much. I'm selling it right here at the top. And that's what you do. You sell the assets you don't absolutely need to live in. If you're thinking of downsizing because your kids have left the nest last few years and go from a 4-bedroom house to a 2 or 3, do it now. And now you've cut your risk to real estate maybe in half. I say the best thing to do is to rent real estate and be totally out of things like stocks and high yield bonds and things. And just be in the 30-year treasury bonds and cash and preserve your money. And if you're in high quality assets like 30-year treasury bonds, which will appreciate when interest rates go down in this crash, or in cash, which will at least hold your value. When everything crashes, that people say you don't make money on cash. Oh, you do when asset prices crash, because now that cash buys 6, 7, 8, 9 times as many stocks for the same dollar. That's how you make money in this. And people don't get that. So just sitting in cash, you're gonna look like a genius. I'm telling you, you buy 30-year treasury bonds, they'll probably go up 40% when stocks go down 80 to 90. That's what history says about that. So you make money, you expand your assets in a safe thing. And who can't sleep on 30-year treasury bonds? I mean, there's one thing government will print money, even if they lose credit, they'll print money to pay those damn bonds. They're not going to default on those. So that's the best way to play it. And it's simple. In business, again, sell if you can. If you've got a family business and your kids aren't interested, sell. If your kids do want to take it over, okay. Hunker down. If you see this coming and you're the first one to cut costs and cut overheads and focus and sell off the parts and create some cash, if you come in this with cash and cash flow, you're going to kill your competitors and you're going to be glad. You're going to suffer a downturn too, but it's going to make you stronger and your competitors weaker and you come out better than ever. That's what General Motors versus Ford. Ford kicked General Motors' ass for the whole first half of the automobile cycle from the late 20s and the early 30s in that crash scenario. General Motors kicked ass and won the game forever, paid off in spades. So there's two ways to play it in business, sell or hunker down. The hunker down is actually the more profitable strategy if you do it correctly.
Yeah. Wow. Well, who didn't love that interview with Harry Dent? My goodness, such a wealth of information and a take on what is happening. I mean, my goodness, it's so compelling. The facts that you bring up and articulating the nuances of what we're dealing with, because there's definitely a lot of opinions on the nuances of the multifaceted economy, and you were able to shed some very compelling light on that. So I really appreciate that. Harry, if people want to learn more about you, the work you do, where can they go and what can they expect to find?
Yeah, that's simple too. HarryDent.com. I have a free weekly newsletter. You hear from me and my partner every week. This is so you can get to know us. I would advise people to get on our full newsletter pretty soon because the fireworks, I think, are getting ready to go off. But you can just, you know, learn more about us. Just get on our newsletter. We'll talk to you every week until we talk you into subscribing.
All right, Harry. Thanks so much for your time here at Crush the Street.